The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but your experience in church seems to be a contradiction to the very message of Jesus himself. We hear that to become a Christian, we need to confess our sins to God and be forgiven. Why then are we afraid to confess these very same sins to fellow Christians? Aren't they in the exact same boat? Don't they have sins of their own? Maybe not the same sin, but sins? Aren't we all sinful? And this isn't just about sin. It could be anything that we struggle with, anything that we'd rather not keep to ourselves, that we want the catharsis of sharing it. But then somehow in the atmosphere, we pick up these signals that we'd be well cautioned, well advised to instead just bury it all deep inside and keep our mouths shut. Why should we feel this way? Isn't the church supposed to be a safe place? Isn't the church supposed to be a sanctuary? Isn't the church supposed to be a family? Instead, churches often seem like social clubs. Well, my friend, you raise a very fair objection if this is concerning you. The good news is that many churches do function as families. The bad news is that there are also a lot of churches that function as social clubs. Meanwhile, on this particular Christian radio show that you happen to be listening to right now, we do not shy away from any topic. We welcome open, sincere discussion, even when such discussion is personally painful. Joining me today is a woman who is withholding her last name for understandable reasons. And I'm going to tell you, I know her well. She's not withholding her name because she isn't courageous enough, to be honest. She's a very courageous woman, but she is being sensitive to some other people that she will be mentioning. So by mentioning her name in a way, you'd figure out who they are. And that's why we're only going to know her by her first name, Deb. Deb is a native San Diegan. She has been a born-again Christian for over 25 years. She's been married for 29 years to a great man, and together they have two grown children. Deb is very successful in the professional business world. And today, Deb shares from the heart. She wants you to know the story of her struggle, control, and navigation through life as a Christian woman who has a son who now defines himself as gay. How do I do this? Deb has asked herself in the past. Why am I a pioneer? Well, Deb, welcome to our program.
Thank you, Bob. And thank you so much for this opportunity to share my story. And it's really a story about a mother's heart, a story about hope and struggle, and finally the release of my control. And I just want to start out by saying this is not about my son, and this isn't about the gay community, and we're not here to debate whether that's right or wrong. It's really a story about my journey of just giving up and giving God the reins, which we pretty much all could agree that we need to do. And how do you do that when you don't end up with the life that you thought you were going to have?
Okay, well, at what point did you realize it wasn't quite the life that you thought you were going to have? How long ago are we talking about? How long has this been going on?
Approximately 8 years, so about 2005 is kind of when my world got turned upside down.
Okay, and what happened? Tell us what happened in 2005.
Well, you know, as a young girl, you grow up thinking you're going to have a white picket fence and 2.5 kids and the dream and a perfect little family.
I've never understood the 2.5
kids. I don't know.
I hear that all the time. But what's an example of a 0.5 kid?
I don't know. I think it's the stats, you know.
It's kind of the
everything that you're supposed to have, right? And so I did marry a great man, and I did have two kids. I didn't have the other half, still waiting for the other half. Maybe that's the dog, but I did have two
that's
kids.
The dog could be the point.
Yeah, that's
there
true.
We go. Yeah.
So I did have two kids and have a great marriage. And you know, we started going to church when our youngest son was a baby, and we both sought church. We both grew up in the church, but we weren't really necessarily walking with the Lord. We both came from kind of denominational backgrounds, but we started going to church. We raised our kids in the church, and we really believe that if you love God and love your spouse, everything else is going to be okay. You go to church, you take your kids to church, and everything will work out fine.
And you know what? There are pastors that teach that. I just don't know what Bible they're reading.
Yeah,
because the Bible makes it clear that we're going to have all kinds of trials. And just because we now have a relationship with God, it doesn't mean that life is suddenly going to get easy.
Right. But when you're a young mother and you're doing the best you can, you're struggling to raise your kids.
You want to believe that.
You want to believe
and
it.
I still
right?
want to believe that.
Yes.
And I'm not even a young mother anymore.
There you
and
go.
I still want to believe that.
And, you know, it's kind of funny because in church we talk about like sin, and we talk about, we kind of have like our top five, like the big chalkboard, right? As if God has a hierarchy of sin. And we usually talk about, I think, what is it? Murder, pornography, abortion, adultery,
the
homosexuality.
The sexual sins always make
right.
it to the top of our list.
Those are the top five. And we don't ever really talk about them unless we're talking about somebody else.
And yet when we look at lists of sin in the scriptures, there are things like gossip and arrogance.
Exactly.
And they're interwoven and embedded with those other ones.
Well, we couch our gossip by saying, let me just pray for you. Like, I just want to pray for you. And that's how we kind of get the gossip out there without actually sinning.
Yeah, we rush over like puppy dogs and lay hands on people quickly and try
yes.
to give them quick fixes. And maybe all they were trying to do is share from the heart and not get fixed.
Right. And so we usually only talk about those things when we're talking about other people, like disgraced televangelists or politicians, or we're trying to get a law passed. And a lot of times we come across as really holier than thou about things. And what I really wanted to share is this particular struggle in our life and my life. Like you said earlier, I didn't ever intend to be a pioneer. But what I wanted to talk about is you don't actually hear about real people who go through real issues, because at church, you kind of tend to hide things. Oh, I don't want them to know that my child's going through this or I'm going through that, because people will judge me.
And yet that kind of openness is supposed to be what Christianity is all about.
Exactly. And I'm not saying that it's a denominational thing. It's not a church fault. I think it's just something that
happens. It's human nature.
It's human nature. But I think when you expose things to the light, it removes the sting and it kind of disarms the enemy. And the enemy doesn't really have much ammunition against you, but we're so afraid to do that because we don't want to let other people in. But actually, if you let them in and let them carry your burdens, it makes it so much easier. And so that's kind of where we started with my particular struggle, or with the struggle of our family, was to let people in. And so our particular struggle started in 2005. And it was really when our son told us that he was gay. And, you know, I want to talk really briefly about that, about the stereotypes. You know, we have on one end, as a Christian, you're sometimes stereotyped as a right-wing Christian fundamentalist. You're part of those Westboro Baptist people.
Which are horrible and which
yes.
have been denounced many, many times on this radio
Let
program.
Us just go on record that that we don't believe that and we don't think like that. But you know, the stereotype is that we hate people. And if you're gay, we hate you. And we're all against anything that gives rights to anybody that's gay. Then on the far other end of the spectrum, we tend to stereotype anybody who defines himself as gay as being someone who marches in a parade with a rainbow flag, that they hate Christians, and that they're just so far removed from the truth. And those are just so polar
yeah,
opposites.
And it's so important that you're pointing this out, Deb, because I think people are mistaking militant gay activists with the high majority of
right.
gay people. But the militant gay activists are making the biggest noise, and it's like the old saying, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. I believe that most gay people, and I've counseled many as a pastor, just want to be left alone and live their
I
lives
agree.
In peace. And that doesn't mean that I approve of their lifestyle, but I have no problem with their desire to be left alone either. I have no desire to interfere with their life. And yet the militant gay activists that are trying to accuse you of being hateful if you just have a different opinion, that's what most Christians react to. And it's so important to know they are not really speaking for most gay people. And we want to be fair to the majority of gay people today.
Well, absolutely. And in the church, we buy into those stereotypes as well. And when we talk about sin, we don't think about that sin actually has a face. And so I'm a mother, and if you're talking about sin in my life or the life of my children, then my children have a face. And so a homosexuality, whereas the Bible does say that's a sin, it's no greater of a sin than anything else. Just like you talked about earlier, the church busybody, the gossip, lying on your taxes, that's a sin. But we tend to make certain ones worse than anything else. And what I want people to hear and to think about and to see is that if somebody is defined in your book as a sinner, they have a face.
And it must be hard for to sit maybe in some church meeting and hear somebody get up and talk about, oh, those radical gays. And you're sitting here thinking, they don't realize that they're talking about my son.
Right. And that doesn't, and you can't define anybody who defines themselves as gay as being radical. Like you said, and in my experience, I have a lot of friends that are gay.
I know people that are making that assumption.
Exactly. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why I'm speaking. That's why I'm saying what I'm saying, because I want people to hear the heart of a mother who loves her son. I love my son. He is a great person.
And you would love your son no matter what he believes.
Absolutely.
No matter what he did, he will always be your son.
Absolutely.
And you will always love him unconditionally. There's nothing he could do to ever cause you to stop.
Absolutely.
Loving him.
Never. He is a wonderful, wonderful person. This just happens to be the catalyst or the thing that caused me to have to deal with my own judgmental issues, and for me to judge, to learn how to not judge other people, and for me to learn how to just let go and stop being a control freak. So,
and when you say judge, you don't necessarily mean approval. You just mean that it's not going to stop you from loving or being just as much of a mother.
Absolutely not. I'm gonna love my children no matter what they do, just like God loves me no matter what I do. I have to show that same love and kindness and respect to my children and to other people that I deal with. Just because you love somebody and you're respectful and kind to them doesn't mean you agree with them. I like to use this example. I do not believe in abortion. I wouldn't have one done on my dining room table. And if I had...
Oh, no. Not on your dining... Well, what part of the furniture would you have one done?
Well, nowhere in my house. Okay. However, if somebody asked me to take them to have one, I wouldn't take someone, but I would pick them up, bring them to my home, put them in my guest bedroom, and feed them chicken soup and nurse them afterwards.
And you would tell them about the love of Jesus.
Absolutely.
You wouldn't pound them on the head and make them feel worse about something that they might have some bad feelings about anyway.
Absolutely, because we're called to love and respect people. No matter what your viewpoint is, no matter whether you agree with someone or you disagree, we're called to love and respect them. And that is ultimately what Christ did. That's ultimately how we're supposed to react to other people.
You know, it was when my children were late in elementary school, almost middle school, that they finally heard the story that my dad had disowned me for becoming a Christian from a Jewish family. And I had to sit my children down and say, you need to understand, if you stop being a Christian, I'd be very disappointed, but you will always be my children and I will always love you no matter what. It was so important to make sure they heard that. My guest is Deb the mom. That's her last name today, Deb Mom. We will be right back. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
This is Dana Wright, a reoccurring co-host on The Bob Siegel Show. You only need to listen to this radio program once to figure out that Bob has very strong opinions on a wide variety of issues. But one of Bob's strongest passions is freedom of speech itself, even when such speech challenges his own convictions. So feel free to send Bob a comment or a thought-provoking question. You can reach Bob on Facebook, Twitter, or questions at bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Welcome back to KCBQ 1170. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. I'm here with my good friend, Deb. A number of years ago, Deb's grown son informed her that he was gay. She loves him as a mother should unconditionally and is here to discuss this.
Thank you, Bob. I wanted to just start by reading some entries from my journal. In 2005, I was sitting in the airport after taking my son up for college for a second year of school, and as I was waiting to get on the plane, I was very reflective and contemplative, and I really wanted to make sure I wrote down everything as I remembered it, and I think subconsciously I was doing it because I knew I was going to go back and see God's hand through all of this. At the time, I probably didn't see God's hand very much in it. I was kind of in a state of shock. So in August of 2005, my life really changed. And I just wanted to start with a little background because I really want people to hear the heart of a mother, the heart of a mother who absolutely loves her son. And my son grew up in a home full of love. My husband and I had been married a very short time when our honeymoon baby came along, a little over 9 months, if anybody's keeping track out there that's listening, a little over 9 months. And like I said, I thought I had it all figured out, but he was a great, great kid. Compliant child, grew up very smart, getting good grades in school, just a wonderful kid. Teachers loved him. He was always very verbal, very creative. I remember his first kiss in kindergarten, a little girl named Lisa. I won't say her last name since we're on the radio. My son, like I said, grew up in the church, was involved in youth group.
But if you are Lisa, you can call in.
There you go.
And if you're the third caller, no, I'm just kidding.
He grew up in church in the youth group and was very active. And, you know, he had all the normal issues we have as teenagers with body image and getting your heart broken, never gave us any trouble, wasn't like a partier.
So there was nothing about this that you saw anything coming.
Oh, absolutely no. No, absolutely not. And when it got time to choose college, we looked at a few Christian colleges and ultimately decided on a college in the Northwest. And we were really, my husband and I were very comfortable. We felt like he's ready to go away to school. He's got strong convictions. And you hear as a Christian parent all about kids going away to college and going crazy and getting drunk and getting girls pregnant and drugs and everything. And we weren't worried about that at all. He had always been very open with us about his thoughts and his feelings and had even made a commitment to purity. My best friend and I taught a class at church, and he went through a ring ceremony where he, promised that he was going to wait till marriage until he had sex. So we were fine, ready for him to go away to school. So I remember standing outside of the dorm as I dropped him off and crying like a mother, silly mom, but feeling very comfortable. And that was really very poignant when I looked back, because that was me leaving my son as I knew him at the time.
Which you need to do. You need to cut
absolutely
the apron strings.
Absolutely. So he started school, loved school, did a great job, actually went away for an internship with Disney in Florida for a while. That was something he always loved, and we blessed him to do that. We prayed about it. We felt like this is something that he should do, and he left school for about 8 months and went into the internship. And we noticed when he first started calling, after he had been gone for a couple months and he would call us, he just talked different, acted different. And so that's kind of weird, but it kind of chalked it up to being out on his own. So he came home that summer, and immediately I knew something was different with him. He was really abrupt with us and kind of short and had just a general, distaste for things that we believed in, things that we liked. And as a mom, you kind of have a sixth sense when you know something's wrong. So I just kept kind of pushing him a little bit, and He wouldn't say anything.
So he would make a few condescending comments about what church, Christianity, the
things
Bible.
Like that, right? Not necessarily. It's
just
specifics.
More like a subtle innuendo, not
exactly.
A blatant thing.
Exactly. And so the night that it all changed, I knew something specifically was wrong, and I went to bed and I couldn't sleep. I was really tormented. So I got up and confronted him, and he said, "You don't want to know." I said, "No, I do want to know. I do want to know." So we went in the other room, and he said, "Mom, I just don't know how to tell you this, but I'm gay."
This must have been awfully scary for him. I mean, you're talking about how you
were.
Can you just imagine how he must have felt?
Oh, and I'm glad you bring that up, Bob, because a lot of times we only talk about ourselves, right? How terrible it was for me. Well, can you imagine this poor child?
It must have been horrifying. He might have thought that you were never going to speak to him again or show him the door.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and he said, "I grew up in the church. I know what the Bible says. I know what our church teaches. Can you imagine how I've wrestled with this?" So we spoke for about 2 hours, and, you know, I told him, just because you feel this way doesn't mean that you are. And I, frankly, at that point, I thought, I can't tell your dad this. I can't tell your dad. And we talked for a while, and I went to bed and didn't sleep a wink all night. I was tormented the entire night. Finally, really early in the morning, I couldn't stand anymore. So I went in my son's room and I said, "Hey, I have to tell your dad. I just can't stand the separation from him." So I woke my husband up.
This must have been even more terrifying, because now it's two of you know.
Yeah, now dad knows. So I woke my husband up and I told him, and it was just wonderful. He held me as I cried, and he said, "You know, I had some suspicions about some things. I'm not really, you know, sure," but he just was wonderful. So for the next week, I stayed in bed. I was a mess for the whole week.
Well, what a wonderful way that your husband responded.
Absolutely. And, you know,
and sounds like you weren't expecting him to respond quite like that.
Well, I think the enemy really has a way of doing a number on your brain.
But he must have shown you that he was a nurturing person before.
Absolutely.
Maybe you thought on this issue,
right.
Maybe even he won't be.
Well, exactly. And I think the enemy, like I said, tells you that. And you think about, again, stereotypes of the father figure in the house and how he would feel about his son.
And we see that on TV. Finds out that his son is gay, wants to push him out the window or something.
Absolutely, you know, not true. My husband.
Hollywood's contribution to getting through all this.
My husband actually went in the bedroom the next morning and told him, "Son, I love you. Nothing's going to change
well,
that."
Well, good for him.
So he's just
good
been wonderful. My husband's a wonderful man. And I, on the other hand, didn't do such a great job. I was in bed for a week. I was paralyzed it was terrible. My mom.
At least you weren't lying on your kitchen table.
No.
Or
I wasn't doing that.
Table?
I wasn't doing that.
Okay.
I went to, my mom even made me go to the doctor, who gave me a prescription for Xanax. And I said, "I don't want to take it, because to me, that's man. Man is saying, take this drug. You're just being a crazy Christian mom and you need to get over this." But I needed to do business with God. And so I remember there were times I'd literally be sitting in my bed, just rocking back and forth. And I want to read to you the lyrics from a song. Right before this happened, I had been listening to this song by Natalie Grant called Held. And like I mentioned earlier, I'm a total control freak. And I think I have everything all wired. And I'd heard this song.
Okay, well, we're going to hear those lyrics when we return. My guest is Deb, talking about a struggle that she had as a mother that maybe a lot of you can relate to. Maybe not with the gay issue, but at times our children don't go quite the road that we thought they would. And if we're in a church, it could be hard. It's supposed to be easier being in a church. Let me say that again. Easier. It's supposed to be, but it's not always that way. We'll be right back. This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480539, WNS Electric.
Hi, I'm Dana Wright, here to talk about Bob Siegel's book, I'd Like to Believe in Jesus, But... The title itself is an open-ended question. You fill in the rest. I'd like to believe in Jesus, but is there really proof for the resurrection of Christ? How could a loving God send people to hell? How will God judge people who never heard of Jesus? Can a scientific mind really accept miracles? These are but some of the concerns keeping honest seekers from considering Christianity. In an interesting, down-to-earth style, Bob tackles the hardest, most painfully honest questions. Rather than shoving these topics under the rug, Bob shows respect for his readers by providing detailed and compelling explanations. This book has been enjoyed by both skeptics and Christians alike. I'd Like to Believe in Jesus, But, by Bob Siegel. Available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. I'm here with my good friend Deb, who is about to read us the lyrics of a very meaningful song. Go ahead, Deb.
Thank you, Bob. I won't sing it because I really wouldn't want to break.
Oh, darn. No, I thought that was in your contract before we agreed to put you on. Okay.
I wouldn't want to break your mic or anything. So.
Okay.
Anyway, like I was saying earlier, I'm kind of a control freak, and I had heard this song by Natalie Grant right before this happened, and I thought, wow, what an awesome song to minister to somebody. You know, if I know someone who's going through something really rough, I'm going to give them this song. So the song was written about someone who lost their child, their baby, but it was very poignant to me. So 2 months is too little. They let him go. They had no sudden healing. To think that Providence would take a child from his mother while she prays is appalling. Who told us we'd be rescued? What has changed, and why should we be saved from nightmares? We're asking why this happens to us, who have died to live. It's unfair. This is what it means to be held, how it feels when the sacred is torn from your life and you survive. This is what it is to be loved and to know that the promise was that when everything fell, we'd be held. This hand is bitterness. We want to taste it and let the hatred numb our sorrows. But the wise hand opens slowly to lilies of the valley and tomorrow. This is what it means to be held, how it feels when the sacred is torn from your life and you survive. If hope is born of suffering, if this is only the beginning, can we not wait for 1 hour watching for our Savior? And I got really choked up in that song, but that's because...
Well, you know, that's so profound. We like to sometimes feature songs. So in one of these future weeks, I think I'm going to just find that and play that so that the audience can hear the music with it. Because I'm guessing that with lyrics that beautiful, the music must be beautiful too.
It is. And what really... has always stood out to me, and I'll even say it now, the line about this is what it means to be held and how it feels when the sacred is torn from your life and you survive. And I survived, but at the time, I didn't think I was going to survive. And the only thing I could do was read scriptures and listen to Christian music. And Psalm 18 was a scripture that I would just literally read over and over and over again. And parts of it says... The beginning is, I love you, Lord, my strength. The Lord is my rock, my fortress, and my deliverer. My God is my rock in whom I take refuge, my shield and the horn of my salvation, my stronghold. And this is me. I was laying in bed, literally praying and asking the Lord to just take me because I can't do this. I didn't sign up for this. I didn't want to be a pioneer.
Take you,
I can't
meaning,
do this.
Meaning take you home?
Yeah.
Take you to heaven,
I was like, it's okay now. It's okay if you want to take me. I'm all right with that. But obviously, he had other plans. I call to the Lord who is worthy of praise, and I've been saved from my enemies. The cords of death entangled me, and the torrents of destruction overwhelmed me. The cords of the grave coiled around me. The snares of death confronted me. In my distress, I called to the Lord. I cried to my God for help. From his temple, he heard my voice. My cry came before him into his ears. The earth trembled and quaked, and the foundations of the mountains shook. They trembled because he was angry. Smoke rose from his nostrils, consuming fire came from his mouth, burning coals blazed out of it. He parted the heavens and came down, dark clouds were under his feet. And we skip down to verse 16, he reached down from on high and took hold of me. You armed me for strength. You armed me with strength for battle. You humbled my adversaries before me. That gave me the strength to know that even though I was in my worst distress, and I've called on this several times in other areas of my life, that even when I feel like I can't do this, and truly the cords of death are entangling me, that God's watching, and he gets a little ticked off, and he comes down and pulls me out of the water, and many times sets my feet right back on the rock, and he says, you can do this.
You and you know what? This. I don't think he's quite as ticked off as we think he is either.
No, no. I don't believe he's an angry God.
He's stubborn enough to make sure that he's going to get you to do the right thing, and he's not going to take you home if it's not your time. But a lot of times we imagine that he's angry with us when he's not.
Right, and I never once felt that God was angry with me or my son or anything. I just felt that God was my protector, you know, and that he was really the only thing I could cling to. I had some great friends, I have to say, and I know a few of them are listening right now.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, how did your church respond?
It sounds like they responded.
Yeah. This was a case where they weren't responding like a social club, where they, in your case, they were being a family and being nurturing.
And we didn't tell everybody right away, but we came from a very small church.
Well, there's always one or two Christians you don't want to tell.
Yeah.
I can always think of a few people I don't want to know.
But by and large, once we did eventually tell everybody, they were awesome. They were great. And through this time, two particular ladies in my life, W and D, and they know who they are, they just bathed me in scripture and love and made me get out of the house and eat something. And they were just wonderful. And so, I want to say this really clearly, because I don't want anybody to listen to this and think that I said, I'm glad my son is gay. I don't mean that. But I will never look back on this episode in my life with anything but happiness, that it drew me closer to God.
Yes, because God made good things come
absolutely
out of
it. Absolutely. So this particular thing was just the thing that drew me closer to God. It could be this or something else for somebody else. And I wanted to read, Barbara Johnson is one of my favorite authors, and she wrote in her book, because she went through a very similar situation with her son, if there's anything the homosexual child needs when his parents learn of his orientation, it's unconditional love. But unconditional love is very hard to give in those first moments of being totally devastated and emotionally overwrought. And then she said, that's why I tell people to shove a sock in their mouth and not say anything for 6 months. Or they'll say the wrong thing because they're in such a state of panic and they completely become unglued, which is what I did. We made tons of mistakes that summer. I remember laying hands on him and trying to pray the demons out of him.
Did he allow that? Or
He did. He wasn't very happy about it.
It was to humor you, like, Mom, if you need to do this.
So. No, he wasn't really happy about it. But, you know, he was going through a lot of stuff, too, at the same time. And we just, as parents, you know, you're desperate. So we forced him to watch videos, and we would talk. And finally, we got some counsel, and the most wise counsel we could get. And we were told, the only thing you can do is love him and keep the lines of communication open. That's it. Well, for a control freak like me, that's a little bit hard because I'm used to managing things and fixing things. And so that was a challenge for me. Some of the unwise counsel we got was, don't let him go back to school. If he goes back to college, boy, it's going to be, you know, Sodom and Gomorrah all over again. But we felt like we had to just trust God. We knew who our son was. We know that he's a good person. We know that he's a wise person, and lay down the rules. And so we did.
I'm here with Deb talking about how she reacted when her son told her that she was gay. It turned out to be a very positive experience for her because her helplessness, not knowing what to do about it, drove her closer to God. And if you just tuned in with us, she loves her son unconditionally. This idea that Christians hate gays, it's a lot of nonsense. We may not necessarily agree with the lifestyle. It does not mean that we hate gays. God doesn't hate gays. If you've been hearing that, you've been hearing a lot of hooey. Don't listen to that stuff anymore. We'll be right back.
Do your kids ask you questions about God and the Bible that you can't answer? Sign yourself or your child up for a class with lots of solid answers at educateforlife.org before someone else gives them the wrong answers. Are you tired of not knowing what to say when your friends and family ask you questions about God and the Bible? Get equipped by signing up for a class at educateforlife.org. When someone asks you, how do you know the Bible's true? Do you say something like, I just know it is? If you're tired of giving lame answers, sign up for a class at educateforlife.org. When someone says that God isn't real, wouldn't it be fun to prove that he is? Quickly, like a verbal ninja? By using science and logic. Sign up for a class at educateforlife.org with Christian apologetics teacher Kevin Conover, and you'll learn how to do that. educateforlife.org.
To KCBQ 1170. I'm your host, Bob Siegel, here with my good friend, Deb. We're only hearing her first name because of the sensitivity of what she's talking about, and so that she will not be talking about other people over the air. She's talking about other people, but you won't know who they are over the air. Deb, go ahead and continue.
Thank you, Bob. So when we last left our show, we were talking...
when we last left our heroes.
I was talking about my control issues and us letting my son go back to school. So, he said, I made some mistakes, right? I just need to go back to school and figure this out. And he was very focused on just wanting to go back to school and study. And
you mean he said he made mistakes about the gay lifestyle?
Or whatever, or mistakes in the past.
Oh, okay.
In the past, whatever that means. And I don't want to get into a lot of personal stuff.
Okay.
But you know, he said, I just want to go back to school and figure stuff out and figure out what I want to go, where I want to go to school, what I want to do, what I want to major in, and all of that. So see, whereas we're so focused on that, the kid moves on.
If he was still wanting to work for Disney, it couldn't have been all bad.
Well,
you gotta love Disney.
No, he wanted to go back to school, so he was done with the Disney program. But he just wanted to go back to school. But the point is that as a parent, you just like obsess and hang on to things, and your kids move on from it. They're fine. They're like, hey, by the way, and then they move on. You know, they process things. But you know, I remember I would lay there and just think about, oh my gosh, what's the future going to be like? And I remember we use humor a lot in our household and in our family and in our situation.
Which even the Bible says in Proverbs, it says a lot about humor and laughter. It's actually very important.
Well, and this particular summer that I took him back to school, I remember we were driving around up there at school and I said, you know, one of my biggest fears is you're going to move to San Francisco and live in a house with a rainbow flag out front and you're going to hate me because I'm a Christian. He just laughed. And so, you know, you have to make jokes sometimes.
This is interesting, though, because I'll bet he encounters people that say, oh, all those evangelical Christians are hateful. And just as you have a reaction when you might be in church and they say something about gays, now he's going to have a reaction when someone says all Christians hate. He's going to go, excuse me, my mother loves me very much.
Right, exactly. And although he identifies himself as gay, doesn't identify himself as, you know, in the gay lifestyle.
Absolutely. Right.
Yeah, he's just a great person. That's just one facet of his life. That's just one facet.
Which I think is important because a lot of times people are taught to say your sexuality is 100% of your identity as if it's your race. There's all kinds of wonderful things about your son. And
absolutely,
this is one dimension of it.
Right. And if you were someone that struggled with pornography, we wouldn't say your whole life was tied up in that. We would say that's one facet of your life. If you're someone who gossips, that's one facet of your life. That's not every part of your life. And so I think it's important to remember that people are people, and we can't just kind of paint them with a broad paintbrush about whatever their issue is and just say that their whole life is wrapped up in that, and that's all we see.
But we do live in a culture that likes to paint things in extremes.
Absolutely.
They don't understand compartmentalization. They don't understand gray areas. They don't understand subtlety, nuance. And this is important to bring back a little of that.
Right. We let him go back to school, and he did great in school. Me, on the other hand, I came back and... you know, didn't do so great. I felt like I had to kind of read everything and snoop around.
So you were feeling closer to God, but still there was this desire to find a way to fix the situation.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I went to a woman's retreat once where they said, picture yourself taking your children or your problems or whatever it is and laying them down at the feet of the cross, and then you don't go back and pick them up again. And there I am. There's my hand coming into the picture as I'm trying to pick them back up again.
I'll leave them there till 2:30, like it used to be at preschool. Then I'll come pick them up, God.
You have until he's like 21, God, to figure this out, or I'm stepping in.
Right.
Anyway, but I had some amazing friends and support. We, like I said before, we made a lot of mistakes. I remember one time when he went back to school, we sent him this long email, you know, with all of our questions. And I got to hand it to him. He said, if you send me another email like that, I'm going to delete it. It really didn't do anybody any good. But this is what I had to learn, that my need to know and control was really just taking God out of it, which is not the right thing to do.
Yeah, and again, like you said, substitute a different issue. Parents need to learn to let their kids go, period.
Right.
Even in the most positive way, the Bible says a man will leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife. There's a point where we leave.
Absolutely. And I think the difference between kids, our kids nowadays, and when we were growing up, we would go to college and make those mistakes, and you didn't have Facebook, you didn't have LiveJournal, you didn't have text, you didn't have all of that.
Well, we are living in a big fishbowl,
yes,
which we didn't live in before. That's true.
Yes, absolutely. But throughout this ordeal and struggle, God was so good to me. And I'm reading a book about when God winks at you. And so I call these God winks, but different things would happen where I'd be at work and angels, I would call them angels. So don't anybody, I didn't see angels at the workplace, but people would come in and sit down and talk to me, and I'd be helping them with something. And all of a sudden the conversation would turn towards their children, and they would tell me stories about how their kids wandered away and then they came back. And that just gave me hope. And even though communications were a little strained and he was still kind of distant, we just kept to the plan of loving him, keeping communications open. And by Christmas of 2005, he kind of was slowly coming around, and he came back, came home for Christmas, and things were getting better in our relationship. And I remember one night in particular, because when you're going through things, whatever it is, you go up and down and up and down and up and down. And I remember one night I was in bed and I was just crying. And I remember I had this thought, well, God, you sacrificed your son. Now, my son is not the son of God. So please, I'm not, don't anybody write to Bob and think it's this big controversial.
Son is not the son of God. We like to keep our theology straight
yes,
on
correct.
This program.
But God, you sent your son down and sacrificed him. So I had to sacrifice my son in my mind to say, no matter what happens, no matter what, whatever my worst fear is, whatever my biggest hope is, whatever happens, I'm going to love you, God, and I'm going to love my son no matter what. And that thought freed me to not obsess so much about the future or what was going to happen or what was going to go on, because I had to just truly, if I truly believe that God's in control, I had to live it out each and every day. So one day I'm driving down the road, I'm going to the store, and a song comes on the radio. And this was a song by Crystal Lewis called Trust Me. And when my son and I would drive to school every morning, that song would come on, and I used to laugh, oh, it's my song to you as a parent. So I heard the song and I thought, oh my gosh, I've got to get a copy of this on a CD and send it to him. He's going to hear it and he's going to realize that I'm right. And then all of a sudden, look, God said to me, this isn't about you and your son. It's about you and me. I'm asking you to trust me. So it totally flipped the script on the song and the lyrics to be about me and God, not me and my son. Again, I was trying to control things. And I said, okay, Lord, I just need some hope. I need a sign. So I go to Target. I'm walking down the aisle, and there's a lady on one of those little disability scooters. And she's asked me for some help to get something off the top shelf. So I get it down for her, and I hand it to her. And she says, thank you so much. And I turn to walk away, and she goes, excuse me. I say, yes. She said, God is going to bless you. And I thought it was just, you know, God bless you. And she said, no, God is going to bless you. And she looked straight at me. And I went, okay, I got it.
Deb, it is so heartening to hear that Target does more than compromise our credit cards. It's nice to hear a good story from Target. Okay, we'll be right back. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out his online column, Forbidden Table Talk, published and hosted weekly by Communities Digital News. Bob is also a regular contributor to San Diego Rostra. We invite you to visit Bob's website at www.bobsiegel.net. You can listen to previous radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and find information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net. BobSiegel.net.
We're down to our last segment, and we'll probably be right in the middle of something when it's time to go. So I'm going to, at this time, ahead of time, thank you so much for coming. It's very brave of you to talk about these things. And I know there are all kinds of people out there with similar struggles, not necessarily with a gay son, but letting go of whatever their children are struggling with, letting go of their children, even when their children are doing just great. And just your honesty about how you felt before God, instead of pretending that everything was perfect with God. And just, I know that that's inspiring so many people. And I'll look forward to hearing some of the responses that you'll get by email and by Facebook. In fact, as a matter of fact, we can't give out your contact information, can we?
But they can contact you on Facebook,
they can,
Bob.
Yes, by all means, go to my Facebook page, Bob Siegel, or just go to questions@bobsiegel.net. And any comment or question that you have for Deb, we'll pass it on. Glad I caught that before I opened up my big stupid mouth. Well, I did open it up, but I kind of closed it.
So. That's okay. I got
you. Okay. Good. Well, go ahead.
And thank you, Bob, for allowing me to be here and to just share from my heart. And I hope what everybody's really hearing is what I want them to hear is that ultimately love is the thing that wins out. And that no matter what, you just have to love people and you have to love God and you have to trust God. And everything else will work out. Now, I also want to say, this doesn't mean that my life has been smooth and peachy keen ever since.
Well, I was going to ask, how are you navigating this now in the present? How is your relationship with your son now? And how is your relationship with God right now?
Well, relationship with my son is absolutely wonderful. We have a great relationship. He does have someone in his life, and I will call him his friend. I don't use any other term other than friend. And I wish I could say I didn't like him, but I really do like his friend. He's a wonderful person, and we've had him in our home. And our rules have always been, your friends are welcome in our home, no matter who they are. But we have rules in our home. And so just like if it was a girl and you weren't married to her, you wouldn't be able to sleep in the same bed with her. So in this situation, it's a guy. And so you may not sleep in the same bed with this person in our home. And they're fine with that. They're respectful of that. In fact, we go on vacations with our son. And we have absolutely, there's not one issue or problem with the relationship. We have a great relationship with him. And my relationship with God is great. And I've not ever wavered in my belief or anything as a result of this, that, you know, of what's gone on. There's been other bumps in the road that are completely unrelated to this that I've had to work through, anxiety disorders and things that I've had to work through. So my message to people out there is, it's not one and done. You know, just because you go through something and you feel really strong, sometimes later on you're going to go through something else and you have to pull that toolbox out again. But every time it's kind of like a stripping of myself down to exactly what it is that I want to be. And what I want to be is a woman who glorifies God in everything that I do. I don't always do it. Some of my employees will tell you I don't always do that, but I try to glorify God in all that I do. And what I want people to see in me is someone who loves God, and I love my family, and I love other people. And that's ultimately what it's about. And you just have to try to put God first and let him be in control. And when I truly say my hands are open and God, you could take everything, I truly have to mean that, because he has a better plan for me than I've ever could have. Initially, when this started, I thought his plan wasn't so great, but I can't see what's going on around the corner. I don't know what's going to happen 10 minutes from now or 10 years from now. So I have to just kind of go along for the ride and say, whatever it is that you want, God. We have a great relationship. And a lot of it came from some tools. We went to a Love One Out conference from Focus on the Family, and that was great. And that really helped us to define that truly the only thing that ever changes people And hear me, I'm not saying change is gay people or
it's people, period.
People, period, is love. Loving people right where they are, coming alongside of them and loving them where they are and helping them is the only thing that ever makes a difference in anybody's life. And so that's really what you have to do. And like I said, believing that that is the best way is the way that we cope, the way that we survive, the way that we always try to approach everything. And one of the stories that I heard when I went to the Love One Out conference, which really ministered to me, was a story by a woman named Melissa Freirer, who used to speak a lot with Focus on the Family. And she talked about growing up, she was sexually abused by someone outside of her family, and that turned her against men. She thought to be a woman was a negative thing. So she became a lesbian, and she also became a drug addict and an alcoholic. And over the years, she just had anger issues and temper issues, but it just was never really happy. And at one point decided that she wanted to start going to church. So she and her partner found a church down the street, and it was a denominational church. I don't remember what it was, but needless to say, there was a small congregation and most people had blue hair is what she said. They were an older congregation, and she and her partner kind of stuck out like a sore thumb. Like Sesame Street, one of these things just doesn't belong here. She said everybody knew what they were and how and what.
I've seen people with blue hair before. It's kind of a ghastly sight.
Well, in this situation, she said nobody batted an eye. Nobody looked at them differently.
And that is wonderful.
And
that's
little,
just not what they were expecting.
Absolutely not. Because I'm sure that, you know, you want to kind of, to protect yourself, believe all the rhetoric that you hear. But when someone comes across differently, it kind of bursts your bubble a little bit. She talked about her boss was a Christian who was always very kind and loving towards her. So this little couple in the church kind of adopted her and her partner and had them over for potlucks and dinners and things like that and just loved on him. And eventually she just started finding that her life was distasteful to her, the alcohol, the drugs, the temper, all of that. And she prayed to ask the Lord to come into her heart. And slowly he started changing her. And eventually her partner got saved. And then they untangled that relationship and she went to counseling and she went to different ministries and finally said she got to the point where she felt like it was okay to be a woman. Now, I'm not saying that to say that there's a magic formula because we weren't having a discussion about how to heal people that define themselves as gay. What I want people to get is that somebody loved them right where they were. And that's what she needed was someone to love her. She could have been a drug addict and alcoholic without the gay part of it. And someone still loved her. So ultimately, really, that's the rule that we have to live by.
And whether or not somebody turns from the gay lifestyle or from anything the Bible calls a sin is between them and God.
Absolutely.
One of the other sins that we didn't talk about that's on the list of sin is the sin of being a busybody. It's
right.
Mentioned in Timothy, where Christians are out giving unsolicited advice, butting into people's affairs. Let me say to my fellow Christians, just because you found God and you have a relationship with him doesn't mean you're suddenly an expert on everything, doesn't mean other people's lives are your business.
Absolutely. And I would tell people, if you're encountering something that you're going through, don't go it alone. Because like I said before, when you confess your sin or something that's going on in your family or your life, let other people come around you and carry your burden and love you. It makes the biggest difference. And you have to love your child no matter what. But you have to set boundaries. So if your child doesn't follow the rules that you set in your home, you have to follow your rules and make them follow the rules. Because we teach more to our children about rules and life by sticking to them than by waffling. And right now it seems to be kind of in vogue for parents to just become best friends and to not make their kids do the tough things. And so
like what they call tough love.
Absolutely. You have to stick by your rules, even when you're going to be called unpopular. And trust me, in our situation, there's plenty of people that would say that we're wrong and that we're doing the opposite and we're not doing the popular thing, but we're doing what we feel is the right thing to do. And you know, my son respects me for that. He respects that I have an opinion and I stick to it. And you have to unconditionally love people. And so I want to close with this poem that says, he'll see them home. Don't despair so of your children. God will bring them to the fold. Because he died to save them, they're special to the Lord. He knows how much you love them. He loves them even more. As long as you hold on in prayer, he'll not close the door. Even now he sees your tears and whispers tenderly of love that conquered all, that all men might be free.
Deb, it was just a pleasure to have you on. You are absolutely wonderful. We hope you'll come on our program again. This is Bob Siegel, and we will see all of you next week.
The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.